shows the growth that Richfield football's had. I mean, Hawkinson obviously is like kind of the powerhouse, and we're not scared of them anymore.
Legit team, they got legit players, but the one thing about them is after, we were just freaking homies. It was battle on the field, after that we're homies.
This is the SB Live Washington Podcast. Your weekly, twice weekly, I should say, conversation about high school sports and the people who play them across the Evergreen State. I'm Andy Bueller, your host and a reporter with SB Live. Today we're going to talk about what we saw, where we were in week three of the high school football season in Washington. We're going to give you notes on the top storylines across this state, as well as some of the top performances that we were at, that we were not at. And we're going to have a lot of fun doing it. Joining me now is my partner in crime, a senior reporter with SB Live, the prodigal son of Tacoma. And depending on the week, he's either your pal and mine, or he's nobody's pal. Which is it this week? Todd Millis is with me.
Man, we had some exciting games in week three. So I'm everybody's friend. You know, saw an overtime game, saw a game that went down to the wire on Friday. So I know you saw a couple really good games, Andy. We covered a lot of really good games as a company, so I'm everybody's friend this week.
Well, let's jump into that, Todd, because you're right. You know, last week, I think we were sitting after week two going, okay, there was a lot of chalk this week, a lot of blowouts, a lot of shutouts, and, you know, plenty across the entire state to highlight, to talk about. But this week, it just feels like, you know, for a week three, there's just so much. So we're going to start with you, Todd. Sumner Puyallup on Friday. And then on Saturday, you were at the great Pop Keeney Stadium in Bothell for Coeur d'Alene and North Creek, which went to overtime. Give us a view of kind of what you saw this week.
I saw what I thought I was going to see Friday night. Two really good teams in the 4A SPSL, two kind of contenders to the throne that Graham Kapausen's kind of sitting in right now. A game that went down to the wire. Was really impressed with Bo Carlson, both his running ability, made some good throws, got away with a couple throws too. Peyton Wing, the game-winning touchdown with 3.5 minutes to go. In a game where it was kind of a grinder game, where both teams made a fair share of mistakes with penalties, and there were multiple turnovers on both sides. There was a bobbled punt snap. And I think sometimes that happens, Andy, when two really good teams get together like Sumner and Puyallup. I thought in the end, the difference was Peyton Wing, Eric Buck, those two really good linebackers that Sumner has, really kind of getting some pressure on Micah Balzerini once Puyallup was driving for the game-winning points or game-tying points, whatever, however you want to look at it. And to get the hold right outside the red zone in the final seconds was very impressive with that defense. I also want to kind of point out a guy that kind of gets lost in the Sumner team on both ends who had a pretty good impact. And that's Jay Mentick, a defensive back. He's the one that swatted the last pass away in the end zone, had some big plays on offense. He's a returner on special teams. He's one of the few impact underclassmen on this team. And I think when this group of seniors graduate, he's going to be kind of the leader of this group. But it was a really impressive show by both teams. Both teams are going to be factors, Andy, moving forward, not only in the 4A SPSL, but I would suspect in the postseason as well.
If you're just joining us for the first time this week, we are reporters covering high school sports across the state of Washington. Scorebooklive.com/Washington is where you're going to find our work, as well as the work from a lot of contributors across the state throughout the year. If you like this podcast, head to Apple and hit subscribe. Leave us a review and a rating while we're at it, and tell us what you like, what you don't like, and we certainly hope to have you back. On Saturday, Todd, you were at Pop Keeney Stadium. You saw Coeur d'Alene, Northern Idaho powerhouse, drive all the way over on a game that I don't think was originally in the schedule and take on an up-and-coming North Creek team. What did you see there?
Oh, no. This was a game that was part of the original schedule, Andy. This was, you know, Sean Amos, you know, I asked him, I said, how did this game get on your radar? Are you friends with Torrey Myers, the coach at North Creek? And he said, No, he says, my AD and I are constantly scouring schedules to try and get good games. And you see Coeur d'Alene play a lot of the good GSL teams year in and year out. Now, last year was obviously kind of fluky because Washington wasn't playing in the fall. So they had to play, you know, a lot of their North counterparts more than once. So, but this was a game that was originally on the schedule. They drove over that morning, got there, got off to a really slow start. But a guy that you know, Andy, that you've written about, Isaiah Griffin, he, you know, he had a kickoff return right at the end of the third quarter that really got him going. And after that, it just seems it was interesting how a special teams, big special teams play kind of got their offense in rhythm, which is really weird because it, you know, why would that have an impact on your offense? But they just sort of seemed to get jazzed and settled down and scored a few touchdowns the rest of the way, including in overtime. And then they got the defensive stop on the 2-point conversion pass from North Creek to win 43-42. But I mean, the star of the show, the star of the game in a losing effort was Kennedy McGill, 220 rushing yards. He was almost at 200 yards passing. He had, you know, six total touchdowns. Andy he was fantastic. He had a play that'll be in our, you know, our state highlights package next week, you know, kind of a rugby scrum where he was trying to just get the first down, and the referees, to their credit, kind of let it go. And he said the offensive line just kind of parted a lane for him in this big scrum. And all of a sudden he just sort of popped out and had a big long touchdown run. He's a really good football player, Andy. I made the observation afterward that I think he's the best quarterback in the 4A Kinko in a group with a lot of newcomers. He can run. He's stronger than he looks. He's a good passer, and he's really improved in that. But his command of the offense and his confidence is what really comes through on a team that really needs him. He's their best player, along with Rocco Traore. But he's their leader. He's their best player. North Creek coming up just a little short against Idaho Powerhouse, but a kind of a statement for a team that is probably the fifth team in the Kinko 4A. But with that performance, maybe can move up.
Yeah, Todd, you and I about a year ago had been pivoted during the pandemic shutdowns in Washington to help kind of jumpstart our presence in Idaho and statewide coverage there for the football season. And so, you know, we got a chance to go out to Coeur d'Alene, you know, go and see a practice and talk to Sean Amos and see a really great and well respected coach. How they do things on a day to day basis. And that was certainly a lot of fun. Isaiah Griffin, who you mentioned, was a transfer from Gonzaga Prep that left during the shutdown, got a chance to be a part of that great run to the that fell just shy of the state championship in the state semis. And it sounds like he's back and really making an impact this year. But for Kennedy McGill, I mean, gosh, North Creek was number 44 in our all classification countdown. And I remember you saying in the preseason, you know, he's kind of the key to this thing on what this, the ceiling of this Jaguars group is like, how much can he really, take into his own hands and how capable is he? And it sounds like, he has brought, you know, not just him, but his rise has really allowed North Creek to kind of be in that conversation in the 4A Kinko, which is such a strong league year after year. I was at a couple of really good games as well, as you said. I was at a 2A league title early season state top 10 matchup between Ridgefield and Hawkinson. I say league title. The league title was not awarded on Friday, but Ridgefield is in the driver's seat to win the 2A GSHL league title for the first time in a very, very long time after beating Hawkinson 35-0 at Hawkinson High School. This is a Hawkinson team that had won seven straight 2A GSHL titles. Two of those years, they went on to win state championships and rise into a state powerhouse. And this is a year under a first-year coach in Clint LeCount, who was the defensive coordinator of those state championship teams. They just ran into a team in Ridgefield that has been building and building and building and building. And I think on Friday night, what was really special is that I think anyone there saw a program grow up in front of their very own eyes. Ridgefield in the spring played this same Hawkinson team. Both teams were undefeated in the shortened season, and it was essentially a team that or a game that put both teams, either the winner in the driver's seat to be crowned league champion. Richfield falls short 14-7 and coughed up the ball in the red zone three times in the second half. Just had every opportunity to win the game and couldn't put it away. And Hawkinson's offense was nowhere to be found on Friday night. And a part of the reason for that was the turnovers that Richfield forced. Ryan Jenkins with an early pick on the first drive to set Richfield up for a touchdown. We saw Ty Snyder, standout two-way receiver, defensive back, have a 50-yard back-breaking score and just a really momentous win for that Richfield program. One that, I did not expect 35-0. I know you didn't either, Todd, but it feels like in our preseason rankings, and I'll say this, I remember when they came out, Richfield was right on the outside looking in, and there were some coaches over there when I went out to their Midnight Madness practice to kick out the season that were saying, come on, we're not a top 10 team. We feel like we're a top 10 team. And to be fair, Richfield went up and played some 2A teams really, really well over the summer. I remember hearing from coaches at Steilacoom, coaches at Tumwater that had said, hey, you better watch out for Richfield because these guys, they can really play. And so I think kind of what it came down to in the preseason was like, hey, this has been Hawkinson's league for a really long time. So until you can do it, until you can beat them and dethrone them and prove it, you are going to be on the outside looking in. And hey, 3 weeks into the season, I don't know that there is a bigger statement made than what they did on Friday night here early in the season. So I've got highlights of that game, interviews, observations, stories, everything, photos on the site, scorebooklove.com/Washington. Of course, Todd, you have coverage of both of your games there as well. So if you want to learn any more about those games or see some of the action, head there as well as the SB Live Sports app. On Saturday, though, as we record this, yesterday, I got a chance to see a Skyview team host Sunnyside from the Columbia Basin Big Nine. It's a 4A non-league matchup. Really kind of excited to see how those two leagues shake up and match up with one another this year. I think we were a little bit surprised to see Eastmont come out with a really strong week one win over Central Valley. And so there's, I know you and I were kind of talking like, hey, do we need to pay closer attention to the Big Nine this year when we look at, when we cover things from the state level and look at kind of this state picture? And Skyview is another team that has been in a league that's kind of been the, as I wrote in my story, the windsock for a state, 4A state champion. Three of the last 4A state champions have come from the Greater St. Helens League, and none of them have been named Skyview. Now, Skyview wants to change that. They want to win their first outright league title since 2011, and they put themselves in a really good position, here, moving to 3-0 with a 38-35 thrilling win over Sunnyside. Sunnyside's got a great, great running back that everybody, we should all know about, named Miles Newhouse. He's a 6'205" power back who's also a 400 sprinter. He's got great size, great speed, and he's got this long blonde hair, Todd, and he just plays with this mean edge. It's like I wouldn't want to be going to tackle him because he just looks like he wants to rip your head off. you can kind of see his face, within his helmet. But going up against a front seven in Skyview that's really big, it's the strength of that team. Sunnyside was kind of forced to go to the air a little bit, and it did. Quarterback Logan Rodriguez, a senior, threw for more than 300 yards, three touchdowns, and Sunnyside, there were seven lead changes in this game, and Skyview kind of got on the winning end of some luck late with a pass that was picked off, and then forced a fumble after the interception on a long third down, and Skyview goes and busts out Jaden Knapp, 48-yard touchdown run to seal the game late. So Skyview 3-0 is probably in the best shape of any of those three teams atop the 4A GSHL, with Union losing its starting quarterback Don Coletto last week. Camas going through every state's powerhouse in the preseason, moving to 0-3 after losing to Jesuit of Portland. So we're looking here at Skyview, a team that, it's kind of hard to tell what to make of this type of matchup, Todd. Is this something where Sunnyside's going to be a team that surprises a lot of people in the Big Nine and makes a run at that league title and we see in the postseason? Or did Skyview kind of, not take care of business when it should have, you know, done so more definitively. After what I saw on Saturday, those both looked like very good, capable teams, and Sunnyside has, you know, a really, really dynamic attack that can do more than just hand the ball off to Miles Newhouse.
We talked about this in previous weeks, and after week one, when Eastmont beat Central Valley, you know, the 4A CBBN has kind of taken a little shot to its reputation, and rightfully so, over the past 5 years or so, half decade. They sort of lag behind. And you talk to coaches in that league, they just say, we don't have the athletes that, you know, that the GSHL, 4A GSHL, 4A SPSL, Kinko.
And Todd, when it came down to it too, when the seeding committees were seeding the state playoffs in 2019, that comment was made and not disputed by coaches from that league. So you're right.
And so the encouraging thing, even from last night, and we could even talk about West Valley Yakima, who played Kennewick relatively tough, you know. Yeah. The Castle kid had a pretty good game, but they just seem to be finding more solid footing in what they're doing. A big win at Eastmont. Yeah, now they went to Gonzaga Prep and got beat. And
Down 4 to 5 starters, so I kind of put an asterisk on that game from Eastmont's perspective.
Okay, well, Mike Donnell, appreciate you saying that. But I mean, you look at the league, you know, they're not getting blown out 70-0. And stuff, you know, which has kind of happened in some big time games here the last few years. Now, listen, I remember here, you know, when Trey Adams was at Wenatchee, you know, and they had that good run of playoff teams, that was a team that people didn't want to face. And it's been, and since then, they've sort of taken this dip. It's good to see, you know, Sunnyside come over to Vancouver and play Skyview tough. And we mentioned Eastmont winning at home over Central Valley and West Valley of Yakima, and, you know, Wenatchee beat Mount Baker, a 1A school that just gave Seattle Prep all it could handle. These are the kind of things that are encouraging for this particular league moving forward, a league that's under heavy criticism, especially for a league that has two automatic berths to the state playoffs. When you have the MCC and the GSL, you know, crossing over and battling it out for these precious two spots. So very, very encouraging to see. Now, I want to get back. I also want to tell you about Ridgefield. What do you think the Christmas cards that we're going to get from that coaching staff at Ridgefield, Andy? When we open that envelope and we see Santa on the cover of that Christmas card from Ridgefield in the big conversation bubble, what's it going to say? Is it going to say, you guys are fools? What's it going to say? Listen to Coach Rice. What do you think that message is going to be for us? Since, well, you know, Coach Rice was on us all off season, basically saying we're a top 10 team. We got to listen to Coach Rice, right?
Well, it wasn't just head coach Scott Rice. And I'll tell you this, one of the loudest voices in my ear after those rankings came out was coordinator Steve Falstick, who was on Hawkinson's staff. His son Jeremiah was, you know, really, just really good tight end on those Hawkinson teams that won the state titles in 17 and 18. And Steve Falstick is now at Ridgefield. They've since moved and live in Ridgefield. And so he's been probably the loudest critic to me of just saying, hey, come on, this is a good, good team. This is a good, good team. And, you know, it was the same thing. It's like, hey, beat Hawkinson. Beat Hawkinson. He of anyone should know that it's been Hawkinson's league for so long. And I'm not sure at what point in the game it was on Friday night, but Ridgefield was up convincingly, and Hawkinson had not gotten much done on offense. And Ridgefield had a big play, and I'm on the sidelines with my tripod and video camera, and Falstick is kind of walking back towards me, and we meet eyes, and he winks at me in the middle of the game. And I'm going, hey, look, you know, it's just that's got to be the best feeling as a coach, to see something that nobody else did in the preseason when you're with those groups every day. So tip of the hat to Ridgefield and that staff over there.
Andy, we're easy. We just have to, you go beat Hawkinson, you'll have our undivided attention, and they do moving forward. They're going to be in the upper half of our 2A rankings, I think, next week. And this is a team in a classification right now, Andy, that's it's in a lot of flux. Some of those North teams up there, I don't know what's going on with Lakewood losing convincingly to Cedro Woolley, but some of those teams are sort of beating up on one another. I don't think 2A right now is rock solid on any front outside maybe Tumwater. And I, you know, I still like North Kitsap a lot too, but so there's some definite opportunity for the Sputters to win that league, get a couple, maybe a playoff game, home playoff game or two, and make some noise in the state playoffs.
Yeah, no question. And I, last note about Ridgefield, I swear this is not a Ridgefield podcast to all the other listeners from other communities, but the biggest question mark going into the season was at quarterback. They had to replace a really strong quarterback from last year who just kind of took care of business. And the two guys that were in the mix were two sophomores who didn't have any varsity experience. And Braden Malala gets the start in week three, standing at 5'6", 126 pounds, listed on the roster. I'm sure he can barely see over that hulking line of scrimmage there in Spudsville. And he had a tremendous game, showed a ton of poise. He did have an interception, but he threw three touchdowns and just did exactly what they need their quarterback to do, is just manage the game and get the ball to really capable playmakers like Ty Snyder, Ryan Johnson, and a couple of their running backs who found success as well. So flowers go to Braden Malala, the Ridgefield Sputters. Todd, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to introduce a new segment. We've done this. We're tinkering with this a little bit going forward, but I'm going to call this segment the Shouts from the Heavens segment, where we shout down from the heavens and we're giving flowers to five different storylines and programs that made waves over the week. So stick around. When we come back, we're shouting down from the heavens. I want to take a moment to tell you about something really exciting for high school sports fans across the country. SB Live Sports has launched a free iPhone and Android app featuring the latest high school sports news here in Washington and across the country. With the SB Live Sports app, it's now even easier to follow your favorite team and tailor your experience to your interests. With real-time scores and news alerts, as well as video highlights, podcasts, photo galleries, rankings, game coverage, and much more, the app delivers on the content you want in one convenient place. The SB Live Sports app features exclusive content from on-the-ground reporters across the country, and it's the number one source for Washington high school sports fans, with coverage from reporters Todd Millis, myself, Andy Bueller, as well as SB Live's preeminent basketball mind and recruiting expert Dan Dickow. The SB Live Sports app is available at no charge in the Apple App Store and Google Play Store. Download it today. We're back. And we've got a new segment, too. This is called Shouts from the Heavens. It's a segment that looks at five awesome performances and or storylines from the prior week of the high school football season. We're here talking about week three, as we did. You know what we saw in week three. Now, we didn't see all this, but, a lot of people around the state. SB Live has eyes and ears everywhere, man. Todd, you know that. We're going to start. Our first shout from the heaven goes to the Vikings of the Wesco, Lake Stevens, making its season debut after a two-week COVID pause that knocked out its first two home games. Hey, Lake Stevens, you have to start in week three without having played a game yet against O'Day, a team that had looked like the best team in the Class 3A, one of the best teams in the state, number two overall in our all-class rankings. Take on Monty Kohler and Jason Brown and the O'Day Fighting Irish. Lake Stevens wins 20-3 against O'Day, keeps Jason Brown out of the end zone. And Todd, I mean, when you saw this on Friday night, as you're going and covering the game you were at, what's going through your head, and how do you react to this since?
Well, I was stunned, and one of the biggest wins, I think, for Tom Try in his career at Lake Stevens. I talked to Tom before the game, a few days before the game, and just saying, hey, the COVID restart button, and he had sort of a it is what it is tone in his voice. I don't think he particularly liked his team, especially a team where you look at their offensive and defensive fronts. That's the part of it that needs to come together. That was sort of the question mark, especially on offense with all those new linemen. They only have the center back, but I don't think he would have handpicked O'Day to start a season, but that's just the way it went with the two-week COVID quarantine. Now, I had a coach joke with me because, well, they had 2 weeks to prepare for him. Well, yeah, you're right. But, preparing for him and facing him are two different things. Now, it's not like Jason Brown was shut down. He had over 200 yards rushing. What, and this is the, if people that watch Lake Stevens, especially when you have Drew Carter in that secondary, it's a very opportunistic group of athletes. And if you're going to make a mistake or a late read or not secure the ball, this is a team that's going to pounce on you. And that's exactly what happened with all those turnovers they forced Friday night after getting down 3-0 in the first quarter and then going on and scoring 20 straight points. I can't remember a time where I've seen it, you know, a running back over 200 yards and a team only scoring 3 points, but that's kind of what happened. They gave the ball away to Lake Stevens, and that's very obviously uncharacteristic of Monty Kohler's group, but a big, big win for Lake Stevens. And hey, I don't know if you've been noticing, but Glacier Peaks put together a string of pretty impressive wins with a new offensive backfield. That 4A Wesco is really shaping up, especially if it comes down to those teams, to be a real doozy here later in the year.
Well, keep your eyes on this Lake Stevens team, because they've been knocking on the door for the program first state championship. They were close a couple years ago in 2018, losing to Union in the state title game, got upset in an early round by Mount Si in 2019. But I want to zero in on something that Tom Tri told SB Live correspondent Aaron Lommers after the game. This story's up on the site, scorebooklive.com/Washington. He said, all credit here goes to defensive coordinator Eric Dinwiddie. He said, quote, we had about three different fronts that we were switching in and out of on D. We were in all three of them, just mixing it up drive by drive, and they couldn't figure out exactly what we were doing, and we shut their offense down, which is pretty hard to do after what we saw in film. And after seeing what this team did to Union in week one with those just not just the Jason Brown big plays, and that's something that keeping him out of the end zone is tough enough, but being able to force, being able to stop this team on third down, Todd, being able to stop the slow moving glacial train that is O'Day. A lot of credit goes to that Lake Stevens team, and as Tri pointed out, to defensive coordinator Eric Dinwiddie. So flowers down from the heavens to Lake Stevens in week one. Our second spotlight of the week goes to Henry Mercado, man. Kamayakin Braves. 3 weeks into the season, I think after what Kamayakin did to Richland, a team that we had projected to win the MCC this year, 3 weeks into the season, Kamayakin is not just the MCC favorite, but Kamayakin is a genuine 4A state contender.
Well, look what happens when you don't give the football away. I had a coach tell me when I first asked about Henry Mercado last spring, especially growing up in some of the youth camps over there in the Tri-Cities, they said he's kind of little Russell Wilson, which, you know, you think about Russell Wilson, oh my gosh, playmaker, can throw the ball deep, but he just hadn't been taking care of the football. Well, when that problem became a non-problem or a non-issue, well, look what he's doing. I mean, he's running that offense. They're taking care of the football. They're efficient. I know that we've said that it would surprise me if a team in that league ran the table en route to getting to the postseason just because of the depth of that league. I know we said it would be a surprise. I'm kind of backing away from that a little, Andy.
you just slinking back
a little bit, but it's just the way Kamayakin has beaten these two teams the past 2 weeks. I mean, they haven't been competitive games. I mean, first quarter against Richland and the game's over. I mean, right now that's the kind of level of confidence that they're playing with, and the level of production, and they're getting a different person, especially in their skill positions, to do it every night for Henry Mercado on the outside. Gabe Tahir, you mentioned they've got guys that are just stepping forward and really coming on at the right time. Again, I this Kennewick team can go beat Kamayakin, we all know it, but right now you're right, I'm kind of slinking back from that declaration a little bit after what's happened the past 2 weeks, and right now they're clearly the 4A team to beat from that league, and they'll be in our top 10 rankings this week as well.
God, it's just one of those things where after seeing him play, I was at that Chihuahua game at Lamson Stadium in Kennewick 2 weeks ago and saw what they did to the team that has been on top of that league for a few years now, and walked away going, man, this team is not in our top 10, but they're not going to be out of there for very long. And just to put into perspective what they did to this Richland team, you know, this is a group with, you know, led by a head coach, Mike Niehold, who just surpassed his 100th win a couple weeks ago. He's a state championship winning coach. This is a team that was in the state championship like a couple years ago, 2 years in a row, and won one of them. And, you know, to your point about Mercado, who finished with 219 yards and four touchdowns, completing 13 of 18 passes with a big goose egg in the turnover category. In games I saw over the past 2 years, he was up and down, and it came down to turnovers. You're right. You know, this is a Kamaiakan team that he had all these athletes at his disposal these last couple years in, you know, Tuna Altahir, two-time MCC Player of the Year, in Woodley Downard, speedy wideout, in Messiah Jones, big hulking wideout tight end. And all those guys leave, and Kamaiakan is sitting there, and Bigland told SB Live correspondent Jeff Morrow this after the game. He just said, you know, us coaches were sitting there in the summer, and we're watching this team practice, and these next guys coming up in the group, and then we're going, these guys might be better than last year. And that's so hard to stomach, considering what this team graduated, a program that has also been, you know, Scott Bigland's also won a 4A state title. So a lot of credit goes to Henry Mercado. And, you know, I asked Bigland before the season started. They have a really good backup quarterback in Peyton Graham. He's a Gonzaga commit as a pitcher. He plays quarterback for them too. They sub him in. He's like a kind of a Taysom Hill. He just does a little bit of everything. And he's probably better as a Swiss Army knife for that team than your signal caller. But I asked in the preseason, I said, look, like, is Peyton Graham going to compete for this job? And Bigland said, look, Henry's our guy. Like, you're seeing just an extremely high belief in a player from a coach who knows a kid is going to figure it out. And not everybody can step in as a sophomore like JP Zamora and be this game-changing playmaker. But what Mercado is doing isn't just a testament to the weapons he has around him, but it's proof of his commitment to development. So flowers go to Henry Mercado. You know, we're not crowning the Kamaiakan Braves League champs after week three, but boy, what an impressive start. Next team up. Flowers are coming down from the heavens, Todd. And they're going, they're landing right in the laps of Joshua Perez at Toppenish, man. Talk about quarterbacks that just take care of the ball. 8 touchdowns in another blowout win this weekend. He's off to an incredible start. That was, according to the Yakima Herald Republic, that sets a Yakima Valley record, ties the Yakima Valley record, 8 touchdowns in the game. And through 3 games, Perez has 943 yards passing, 16 touchdowns, and no turnovers. And look, for 3-0 Toppenish, who is firmly nestled there in our top 10 rankings, Perez has at his disposal a pretty impressive crop of receivers, obviously starting with Jason Grant, who broke the single-game school record with 222 yards receiving last week. But Shane Rivera, too. You know, Nick Cortez Jr., Isaiah Maldonado. Like, he's got guys he can get the ball to. And here in his third year as a starter, these guys at Toppenish coming down in their second year in 1A, first year being able to compete for a 1A state title. These guys are off to a really strong start, and it's going to make for what we predicted in the preseason, a really, really enticing 1A SCIC title race. A lot of capable playoff teams coming from that crop. But Todd, you and I met Josh Perez as well as his dad, James, in the spring when we went and saw him play basketball when they played Zilla. For him to come out after, you know, how he's established himself in the sport of basketball to do the same thing in football, you know, what's your view on that?
Well, gosh, if football is his second sport, he's pretty darn good point guard, isn't he? No, I mean, we saw them play. Then probably they didn't play their best game, but he was really good the night we saw him in a loss to Zilla in basketball. And I imagine if he takes that leadership, that general, you know, that sort of that I'm the general here, I'm the field general, we're going to go down and score. If he takes the, you know, that floor general stuff to the football field, I'm sure he's pretty special. But you know what? I'd love to throw the football to Jason Grant. I think I could complete a couple touchdown passes if I could throw the ball to Jason Grant. And you mentioned other receivers, but Jason Grant, if there's a more physically impressive athlete in the Yakima Valley area, I want to see him, because I want to throw the football to Jason Grant. I think he's fantastic. But, you know, 3 wins, I'm doing the math. He's well over 300 yards a game. It's pretty good. 0 interceptions. I don't care who you're playing. But I think Zilla's looking at the schedule. I think Connell's looking at the schedule. And I think they're going, okay, yeah, well, you know, we got you. You know, we're the other good teams in this league. You're right. It's shaping up to be a really good, you know, three team race in that league, three really good teams, all in our top 10. And with those games kind of coming down the pike here later in the fall.
Did you watch the bowl game a few years back between Oregon and TCU, where Oregon was up like 4 or 5 touchdowns at half and TCU came back and won? That was the last game of Mark Helfrich's head coaching career to date. Do you remember that game?
Mark Helfrich is making a podcast appearance here.
Yeah, absolutely, man.
And SB Live High School Football. No, I remember it. Yes, I remember it because there were a lot of Pac-12 football fans that were in anguish as this was going on. It was almost like it became an inevitable result.
It's funny too, because that game is known as one of the biggest, most epic meltdowns in like college football history, and our last shout from the heavens of this week goes to what I think has to be one of the most insane comebacks, the most insane comeback we've seen in this state so far, and that's the Fishbowl. Peninsula trailing 28-0 at half, rattling off 35 unanswered points on Gig Harbor and winning 35-28 in overtime. Peninsula took a drubbing at home to start the season, 51-13 to Bellevue. And man, I you got to think this is a shot in the arm for a Seahawks group that moves on at 2-1 here. But just talk to me. I mean, that game took place in just torrential downpour in Pierce County, Todd. And, you know, this is a rivalry that you've seen going back a long, long ways. What did you make of this Peninsula comeback?
Yeah, it's quite a rivalry. It's a rivalry. If you haven't experienced it, it's unlike a lot of rivalries. You know, it's the old school in Peninsula and the new school in Gig Harbor. It's always played on the campus of Peninsula. It's difficult. It's really difficult to get in and out of that particular stadium where it sits in Purdy. It's kind of up on the hill. I've seen both schools have dominant runs in this rivalry game. It sells out. There are people that are all around the stadium on this outside fence. And, you know, it's been tough when you coach at Gig Harbor, you're expected to be competitive in the Fishbowl. And George Fairhart had a fantastic run in Eatonville. I think his primary rival when he was at Eatonville was probably Ording and then Cascade Christian later, and did well against those teams. Has not beaten Peninsula. This was his best opportunity. He has one of the best senior linebacker prospects in the state in Hudson Cedarlin. You jump out to a 28-0 lead and pouring down rain in the Fishbowl and end up losing that game. That's probably tougher to swallow than some of the blowout losses that they've had here recently. But let's talk about the team that won it, because that's the shot in the arm that the Seahawks team needed. It got drubbed week one against Bellevue. That's a team that doesn't get drubbed, and to get down 28-0, you're thinking, oh my gosh, is it going to happen again? Credit to Ross Philkins. He's built a fantastic program out there, and for them to come back from 4 touchdowns and the way they did it with some big plays coming down the stretch, that would have been a fantastic spectacle to be at. If you were in the South Sound.
No question. And another game where the lights went off and, you know, it's raining cats and dogs, and just it seemed like everything that Friday night lights aspires to be. So shout out to the Peninsula Seahawks, winners of the 2021 Fall Fishbowl. Todd, that's all I got this week from shouting down on the heavens, from the heavens. Do you have any other submissions? Any other enticing storylines we should keep an eye out for or talk about?
Graham Kapowsin, they're our number one team in our top 25, 3 consecutive shutout victories. Now the schedule hasn't been particularly challenging. Talked to Eric Curley on Saturday morning. He's never had 3 shutouts to start a season. And I said, well, how are you guys playing? He says, we're playing good. We're playing a lot of guys. We're playing them early. He said that Joshua Wood, who was our Northwest 9 winner in the class of 2022, has been a little off on his deep pass, missed a couple throws with juice one of our favorite receivers around the state. It's funny, you're so good, and you're maybe a little bit off, and you still have three shutouts to start the season. I mean, Graham Kapausen isn't showing any weakness, but they're going to get a test this weekend. They're going to probably face a really angry Puyallup team Thursday as part of a Thursday doubleheader at Art Crate Field. It'll be fun.
No question. Really looking forward to that one. It's the first big test of the season for a team that was the overwhelming all-classification favorite coming into this season. So a lot to look ahead to in week four. We're going to have a podcast that comes out on Wednesday that takes a look at the top games. We're going to make predictions. We're going to touch on some of the top storylines as things develop. But be on the lookout as you're listening to this for our top plays of the week. Those usually come out on Mondays. You can follow Scorebook Live, SB Live Washington across socials. You can follow Todd at Many Hats Millis on Twitter, me on Twitter at Andy Bueller. Look, top plays of the week. Look, I mean, is it Jordan Sands? Is it Randy Moss? Be on the lookout because it's coming. But we want to hear from you. What do you guys want us to talk about? Who do you want to hear from? We really want to include an athlete interview every one of our late week podcasts. Last week we had two of them, two guys from Richland, Elijah Rodriguez and Deacon Boyce. And the week before that, we had Miles Mayofsky of Kennewick. So who should that interview be this week? Would love to hear from you. Hit me at andy@scorebooklive.com, SB Live on the socials. We will be back Wednesday for week four preview. This podcast is brought to you by SB Live Sports, your national hub for high school sports news and information. Subscribe for free wherever you get podcasts. If you do it on Apple Podcasts, please leave us a rating and a review to help us best serve you, the listener. You can find our website at scorebooklive.com/Washington. There you'll see news, features, highlights, podcasts, and everything in the world of high school sports across this state. As always, a big shout out to our sponsor, Washington Federal. Thanks to Dan Dickow and Todd Millis for bringing the heat every week. This song you're hearing is by the band Woodrow. It's called So Far Away. It's written by James Schroeder, Carl Johnson, and my dad, Matt Bueller. I'm Andy Bueller. We'll be back next week.